This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks.
If you walk through the garden, you better watch your back.
The HBO series The Wire brought us stories about inner-city Baltimore, about the drug dealers, the gangs, the cops, corrupt judges, and failing urban institutions.
First of all, we got permission to grind in these here towers. Second of all,
the program, which went off the air in 2008, has been hailed as some of the best TV ever produced. Now, The Wire is back, not on TV, but in the classroom. A new course at Harvard Law School is using The Wire to teach students about poverty and race. It's called Race and Justice, The Wire. And it's taught by Professor Charles Ogletree. Earlier this week, we went over to Austin Hall on the Cambridge campus to audit the class.
As violent and as explicit as The Wire series is, it understates what was really going on in Baltimore rather than overstates. It's not overly dramatic. It's even worse than what you see. And what you imagine, and I think
on this day, Professor Ogletree introduces a special guest to his students, a man named Larry Darnell Andrews. Andrews was the real-life inspiration for the character Omar, the savvy, independent thug and stick-up artist who lives by his own code. Andrews told the students about the real Baltimore that he knows.
It is Charm City down at the harbor, but across Martin Luther King Boulevard is hell.
So you're going to rob me now. I need to remind you who I am. Omar, isn't it? Pull it slowly, then toss it.
Oh, I will move slow. I ain't tossing nothing. Bow tie.
Scenes like this that portray Omar's world gave The Wire a gritty realism. But Darnell Andrews says the program only begins to tell the real story.
It's PG-13. The Wire is PG-13. It's not really what's going on. We just took tidbits of what's going on.
But Professor Ogletree says these tidbits add up to compelling drama and offer a powerful way to teach young law students the truth about what ails American society.
About police corruption, about drug distribution, about the fact that the corporation that we know about and think about here at Harvard Law School is in many ways eerily similar to the corporation and the gang. There's leadership at the top. There are lieutenants. There are lower-level people. There's a responsibility for cooperation. So students are learning that any structure, any institution that has power can have a big influence.
After class, one of Ogletree's students, Michael Abelson, says The Wire is a useful addition to the curriculum at Harvard Law.
We learn a lot about the theory of the law here and about sort of court decisions on how to interpret the law and things like that. But there's a huge disconnect between the law that you learn in that forum and the actual way people encounter the law in their day-to-day lives.
Student Sakisha Jackson agrees. She says, among other things, The Wire demonstrates to her the limits of the law.
I think it's helped put in perspective for me how the law actually can be very ineffective at helping people out of these sorts of situations.
And that's one lesson Professor Charles Ogletree is trying to get across in this class. He says another one is this. When the students take a closer look at The Wire and the consequences of drugs, gangs, police corruption, and wiretapping, they'll understand these are issues and challenges that are not limited to urban America.
And what they will see, this is not a Baltimore problem. It's an urban problem and a rural problem. And let me give you an example. We've been talking about crack cocaine, and one student has come to me and shared with me that in her own family that she has a brother who's using meth, right, and a brother who got her father addicted on meth. And they're in urban, in rural America, not urban America. Now, she would never have told that story to me if she had not taken the course, and she can say, this is not just a urban black problem. It's a national suburban and rural problem. It's not a black problem. It's a white, brown, it's American problem. It's a class problem, but it's not just lower class. It's upper class who are using drugs in secrecy and not being apprehended by police. And so that's the idea, that it's making students open up to say, you know, this may not be my world, or you know what, it is my world. I may be ashamed of it, but now I can talk about it because it's not just them, it's all of us.
I'm interested to know what these students come into your classroom knowing about this world that The Wire portrays. What do you need to teach them about specifically?
Well, it's interesting. 90% of them know about The Wire because they've watched it. And
yeah,
they've been sort of watching it, and I would say it's voyeuristic. I think they really have a genuine interest in what's going on in urban America. 10% lived it. So I'm trying to create a social consciousness among Harvard Law students. And when I say create it, many of them have it. I don't want to understate that. But to make them see that no matter whether they're corporate lawyers, whether they are doing public interest law, whether they're going to work for NGOs, whether they're going to engage in non-law careers and doing environmental justice, they could make a contribution to our communities. And they don't have to go to Europe or South America or Asia. They can go to Roxbury, Dorchester, Mattapan. They can go to Harlem. They can go to Southeast Washington, D.C. They can go to South Central Los Angeles and make a difference.
And that's Harvard Law School Professor Charles Ogletree talking about using the HBO series The Wire to teach students about poverty and race and urban issues. So listeners, what do you think? What does The Wire teach us about urban America and America in general? Have you seen it? And is it a good idea to use it as a teaching tool? Give us a call. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. And joining us now in the studio for the next 15 minutes or so, the Reverend Eugene Rivers. He's the founder and acting director of the Ella J. Baker House in Dorchester. He also co-founded the Boston 10-Point Coalition. Reverend Rivers, always great to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Anthony.
And also joining us, James Dauphine. He's the director of programs at the Baker House in Dorchester, where he's built a curriculum based on The Wire to reach at youth risk right here in our own backyard in Dorchester. It's called Rewired for Life. And James, good to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Actually, it's named The Wire Project.
The Wire Project. Sorry, I got that wrong. I appreciate it. In any event, I'm still happy that you're here. Let me start with you, Reverend Rivers. We just heard about using The Wire to educate law students about urban America. At the Baker House, you and James are using it to reach young people in the city. Why is this a good idea?
I guess it was 4 years ago. I was in a series of conversations with James about The Wire because having been raised in Philadelphia and having worked with gang-involved young people on and off for the last 30 years, what was striking about The Wire is that it was the closest thing to cinema verite, a cinema verite treatment of the realities of what was going on in the cities that I saw in the medium of television. And so I asked James, I said, could you develop a curriculum based on the characters? Because in the last 25 years in Dorchester, just about every major character that I saw on The Wire, I saw their counterpart in Dorchester. And it was absolutely astounding. Stringer Bell, Marlo, Omar, there were individuals who strongly resembled those characters. And I think that the last point is that intellectually, what was fascinating about The Wire is that it was nuanced and complex. This was not simplistic, reductionist, you know, black versus white. Reality was complicated and nuanced. And one of the things that The Wire achieves is the ability to portray the remarkable complexity of urban life. And as Donnie Andrews said, in a PG-13 format, given the realities that we have on the streets today.
So, James Dauphine, let me come over to you. You've actually put together the course, as Reverend Rivers says. Talk about how you're reaching kids. And the aim, right, is to encourage kids to make better choices. How does understanding the messages of The Wire do that?
Well, it was I developed it so that I could challenge the kids' critical thinking, because some of the decisions that they make only took 20 seconds, and then it basically flushes their life away for the rest of their lives. So I had to create something that showed what was going on in their lives so they could say, okay, what did these guys do wrong? And what would you do better so that you can survive these situations? Because when these situations confront you, you have choices to make. And if you don't make the right decision, it's going to be over. And there's nobody's going to help you. And there's nothing that I know that exists that can help you with these kind of situations at all. Not school, your parents, unless your parents was a gangster or something like that, is not going to be able to help. Your pastor might not be able to help you. So I had to create something that was based on the reality that they exist versus on any kind of reality that everybody else exists at, because that doesn't work. You know, you can't teach a cat to be a dog. You have to basically work with where they're at.
So this is the sort of realist way, as I guess, to sort of bring this reality of the streets to them. Is that the idea?
Well, the reality of the streets is already in them.
Well, see, this is where this question was going. So what are they actually seeing that they haven't seen before, Reverend Rivers?
Well, see, there are two things. When you look at most of the violence prevention stuff,
sure,
it's useless. It's saccharine. It's uninteresting. It's not provocative. It doesn't approximate in any way reality. It's the McGruff dog, take a bite out of crime, right? You know, that has no
resonance impact whatsoever.
No. In fact, I was in a conversation with the vice president of the Boston Foundation, Robert Lewis, who recognized the importance of this immediately, right? And he said that, look, we recognize that you need a pedagogical device that will speak to their lived experience. They've got to be able to look at something and say, you know what, I recognize that reality, and more fundamentally, it's the truth. See, there's much in American life for many young people that's simply a lie. You know, the good guy doesn't win at the end of the day, right? And frequently in life, the fix is in, right? No good deed goes unpunished. And so this is a narrative that says, you know what, life's not fair, and you've got to think about how we navigate. And as James said, it's a brilliant point. Listen, a 20-second decision could determine where I spend the next 40 years of my life. Mm-hmm. And so you see portrayed most dramatically that 20-second point, when do I shoot or do I walk away? And that shot either sends me away for 40 years or it puts me in a box for eternity.
Listeners, we're talking about using The Wire to teach us about urban issues here in America and to teach us about America in general. Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. James, I'm interested to hear about an example of the kind of conversations that you're having in these classes that's inspired by The Wire.
For example, I would say, like, for instance, a kid stands on the block and we say, what happens when a police officer rolls up on you? The first thing the kid says is, we run. And I say, why would you run? Because that's what we supposed to do. We run. But I said, but you didn't do anything. We say, we don't have to do anything. I said, but you have rights. I said, he said, no, we don't have rights. Other people have rights. So I'll take that and I will break it down and try to understand where they get that sense of reality from. And then you'll hear their stories. So I will get stuff on the laws and stuff that what normative culture said. Well, a kid that's on Newberry Street, if they roll up, they will not get chased away, and they won't run. They'll say, let me get your badge number and all this other stuff about police. Let me get the police car's license plate. I'm going to call my parents. There's all this format, internal affairs and all this stuff like that. So I have to teach these kids that these things are for you, too. But they believe they live in a different America than the America that everybody else lives.
Can I throw in one thing?
Absolutely.
That James Dunn that I think is absolutely amazing. James has taken the concept developed by John Rawls, the political philosopher at Harvard, right, in his theory of justice. And he has this one key concept called justice is fairness. And so James does this riff on the Rawlsian concept of justice as fairness applied to The Wire, as opposed to the rules of the game, which is that many of the rules are rigged, and we've got to figure out how we bridge the worlds of the nature of the game as it's lived versus the concept of justice as fairness as we understand it from John Rawls. That's amazing.
That is. Listen, I want to raise this argument. The Wire, first and foremost, is entertainment. Reverend Rivers, you refer to it as a pedagogical device. There are folks that don't accept that, and I want to bring one of these voices into the conversation.
Absolutely.
Joining us right now from New York City is Ishmael Reed. He's a professor emeritus at UC Berkeley. his latest book, Barack Obama and the Jim Crow Media. And Professor Reed, good to have you on the program.
Oh, thank you.
We've invited you on the program because you have concerns about using The Wire to teach about urban America. Why?
Well, I have my point of view. Professor Ogletree said that the kind of depravity we see in The Wire is a microcosm of what goes on a higher level, on the corporate level, in the United States. So why doesn't David Simon just do Goldman Sachs? Why don't we do a HBO series about the gang culture?
Sure, but aren't our cities in trouble? Go ahead, right?
At Goldman Sachs, which almost brought the United States to economic ruin. We still haven't recovered from that recession.
Sure. But aren't our cities in trouble? And what's wrong with doing a program about pointing towards some of those problems as well?
Well, as I said in my debate with David Simon, who says I'm preventing him from enjoying his success because of my criticism, it's a cliche. I mean, you got American Gangster. I mean, Hollywood shows the same scenes of I just saw a movie called Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, where not only were African Americans engaging in drug dealing, but African immigrants. And most of the drug dealing, as I said in my Playboy article, takes place outside of the ghetto. So this kind of portrayal lets other ethnic groups off the hook. And I think that, academia, especially the humanities, because I think most of the universities are making their money at creating things like software for Apple and for the Pentagon. They keep these courses on as frills. So what academia has done is mirroring the success of the media, which has presented African Americans as a sideshow since the beginning of the penny press in the 1830s. So now academia has gotten into show biz. Now, I don't know how The Wire is going to solve the problem of the majority of white boys being unable to read or write at any level of proficiency.
Professor Reed, let me throw some of these arguments at Reverend Rivers in here, as well as James Dauphine. It seems like Reverend Rivers, one of the points here, this deals with cliches and portrays urban America in one particular way, in a fairly narrow way.
Well, Professor Reed, thank you for your observations. I've been a fan of yours, sir, for at least 40 years.
I'm a fan of yours, too, Reverend Rivers. As a matter of fact, you make an appearance in my new novel, Juice.
Lord Jesus, help me. Lord Jesus, help me. All right. See, my view is this. Working where we work, we were looking for some devices, some methods, some strategies using the medium of popular culture. See, my thing is that when I look at season two with Sobotka and the Polish boys on the ports, I mean, I'm sure there are no shortage of Polish Americans who would have been incensed at the fact that they talked about corruption, young white drug dealers like White Mike in season two. So my sense is that, one, we've got the characterization of the Polish dock workers. You've got the less than inspiring white police officers. My takeaway was that, and then you raised the point about why don't we do Goldman Sachs? Well, my sense is Goldman Sachs lawyers are infinitely unattractive. And if I had to look at choose between Jamie Hector as Marlo Stansfield and some flat white boy, I'm sorry. Just because I'm more aesthetically discriminating, I would prefer to look at Michael Williams' performance of Jamie Hector or any of the other brothers, as opposed to some fairly unidimensional white boys who do what they do. So I think that there's an aesthetic argument to be made for The Wire, as opposed to looking at Michael Douglas Wall Street?
Wall Street, that's right. Well, Professor Reverend Rivers, Professor Reed, stand by, and James Dauphine, we want to get some listeners into this conversation. Let's go to Rosemary, who's calling from Jamaica Plain. Hi, Rosemary.
Hello, James.
James Dauphine
is
here as well.
Good.
Okay. I love The Wire, And I also love that none of us who work for big organizations are off the hook. How about the slant of doing good versus looking good?
So you're saying The Wire includes that message, Rosemary, that none of the big organizations are off the hook either?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. They wear the public schools out. They wear the cops out. They wear everybody out. You know, Carcetti, the corrupt white politician who starts out, you know, sort of a mix of hustler, playboy. So it seems to me that, everybody gets the treatment. Mm-hmm. Zapatka, the cops, the black bourgeoisie, capitalism. It's actually quite interesting to me that way.
Equal opportunity pedagogical device, you would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me read something from our website. This comes from Mark, who writes on our website, "The Wire speaks truth to power. I'm a white guy in suburbia, and I learned a great deal through the series. Absolutely valuable, and I think it's wonderful that it's being taught in classrooms." Professor Reed, I want to just ask you, if this is a program and a set of courses that's essentially putting the urban agenda on the table in front of people like Mark, a white guy from suburbia, isn't that a positive thing in itself?
Well, I don't think their whites get enough of this stuff. First of all, for a couple of decades, I guess almost, it's O.J. Simpson and it's Tiger Woods. The New York Post had more front pages devoted to Tiger Woods than to the into the war or 9/11. As a matter of fact, there were 20 front page stories about Tiger Woods. So I think African Americans are cursed, that they're really a fascinating people. I live in the ghetto. First of all, I want to say that they show all these other cultures on The Wire, but when they advertise for The Wire, they show black gangs, all the advertising I've seen. But I live in a ghetto for 30 years, and I think it's much more complicated than what's depicted in The Wire. Now, for example, in my debate with David Simon, the creator, who's sort of like the czar of the African-American experience again, I said, why don't you do something original, like the suburban life of a gun store owner who sends illegal weapons into the ghetto? Or why don't you do a series about all the other ethnic groups that are making all the money? African Americans don't make any money at the underground economy. As a matter of fact, I say they should quit crime because they're not confident at it. The people who are making money in the ghetto where I live in California are from other ethnic groups. They're making for example, South Asians run the hotels where the prostitution occurs. They did a recent series on prostitution in Oakland, and they asked the South Asians about this prostitution industry. That's a lot of money happening in their motels that they own. They said they didn't know what was going on.
Professor Reed, stand by. We want to get a couple more callers in here because we've got a lot of them backed up. Nina's calling from Roxbury. Hi, Nina.
Hi. I'm actually a teacher in Roxbury. I teach dropouts. And I'm wondering if your curriculum, Reverend Rivers, is in any public schools.
That's a great question. Is this expanding?
That's an excellent idea, and we'd like you to reach out to us. James's curriculum is absolutely stunning, just as an intellectual exercise. And so 617-282-6704, you could reach us at the L.J. Baker House and talk to James Dauphine, who has done something quite amazing. And we'd love to discuss this with educators. Season 4 of The Wire that deals with the public schools is one of the most amazing portraits. It's Dickinsonian, right? Now, I'm sorry. It's Dickinsonian in its detail as they follow the lives of these four boys. That stuff is absolutely phenomenal. Mm.
James, are you in touch with city officials about this curriculum? In other words, is the Menino administration interested in this curriculum at all? Is the Boston Police Department involved at all? Because
Rev have a meeting every Wednesday, and he meets with the police officers and all type of law officials and community organizations, actually.
But specifically about this curriculum.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. We've met, in fact.
The reason he's on crutches is because he met with the Big Eagle.
I wanted to say...
No, that's not true. Don't start.
I just say we met with it. I say...
Reverend Rivers' left foot is in a cast, but we're gonna save that story for another program.
Right. Okay? No. I'll tell you, what is significant is that we've had remarkable feedback from the Boston Police Department. The cops love it. The realism, I mean, just take, and this is Irish Boston Police, love The Wire. Okay, and I've talked to a number of officers, and in fact, we met with Judge Leslie Harris, who's a judge in, I guess it's one of the district court judges, and we're looking to line up young people with Judge Harris to set up the curriculum and introduce these young people to the options in life using The Wire as the lens for them to conceptualize what kinds of decisions they have to make.
Let's get another call. Alfred is calling from Clinton. Hi, Alfred.
How are you doing?
Very well. What's on your mind?
Well, I taught gangsters for 6 years. I loved that work, but it was very difficult. The reverend is speaking the truth. You better meet them where they are. If you try to disregard their life experience, and they have very hard lives, and I'll tell you, I think a lot of people don't understand. The truth is, every gangster I met, without exception, would not have chosen that life. They were such good kids, and I loved working with them, and I love that you guys are using The Wire. The only thing that I look at is I wonder if the people who have not had the experience like I had and you gentlemen have had, if they understand how true it really is, because that's why I loved it so much, because it was right there on the money. It doesn't hide anything.
Well, Alfred,
I really
listen.
I appreciate that you guys are doing that work.
Alfred, and we appreciate your call. Our time runs short, so I want to try to get one more call in. David from New Bedford is calling. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
Very well. Good to hear from you.
I'll try to be quick. I applaud Reverend Rivers. I know him. I've been a private investigator in Boston for over 25 years, and I've helped to defend thousands of these kids. The curious thing about Boston is that you can see ethnic criminal neighborhoods that are Italian, that are Irish. And it's not just about African-American neighborhoods. These other criminal ethnic neighborhoods are not, or ethnic neighborhoods that have a lot of crime are not so well, so much talked about. But, and I don't know The Wire. I've heard it's good, but what strikes me as important is that you've got to find a way to address, get these kids to look at their lives while de-eroticizing or de-glamorizing
this
life.
That's right.
And I don't know how you do that exactly when you ask them to look at this piece of fiction, which is entertainment, which is attempting to make the life both, exciting while criticizing it. You got to find a way to short-circuit that charisma.
David, that's a great point, and I'm glad you brought it up. And let me give Reverend Rivers a chance to respond to it. I mean, it seems like the essence of what's a gentle criticism there is, does a show like The Wire glamorize this life? And is that the hook that's bringing kids into these programs?
That's an excellent question. And what's amazing about the series, if one studies it, because my argument has been that you don't watch it, you study it. What's interesting is that as you follow the stories, these stories end tragically. So the idea that somehow if I'm Pimp Mac Daddy, New Jack City, let's get busy with it, and I'm going to ride off into the sunset and become Jay-Z or P. Diddy, that's not how the story ends. Now, it really is serious literature that way, that what you see is that, dude, you can get in the game and lose big. And so unlike the pop, Hollywood, or the rap video stuff, this is not glamorized. This is not 50 Cent ride off into the sunset, a multi-billionaire.
Well, Reverend Rivers, thanks so much for coming in. I'm afraid that's all the time we have, but we really appreciate you showing up today.
Can I get a plug in for my book?
Absolutely.
Right on, brother.
I was going to say, Professor Ishmael Reed, thank you for coming in. His book is Barack Obama and the Jim Crow Media. And we also had in the studio James Dauphine. He's director of programs at the Ella J. Baker House in Dorchester. And the debate will continue, but the fact is, this is a program that seems to be spreading. Phillips Exeter Academy, I read, is teaching The Wire. Berkeley College out in California, as well as Harvard University, as well as right here in Dorchester. So that's that. When we come back, Only a Game's Bill Littlefield on the latest sports head injuries, the one that took a Bruins star center out for the season. And listeners, the program wouldn't be able to continue without support from listeners like you. WBUR is a great way for you to help support Radio Boston. Here's afternoon host Dolores Handy and WBUR.org editor Andrew Phelps to tell you how.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is free. Please keep it that way with your financial support. Go to WBUR.org and click the donate button at the top of the screen.